kids, it's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
What's up, everybody? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. Joining as usual, Cole, how are you doing?
I'm not dead, but I'm pretty damn close.
Nice.
So there will be a shortage of me for this episode because I'm just kind of hanging in there like a hair in a biscuit.
Ew.
Ew. But have you ever tried to get a hair out of a biscuit? They just stick, right? That's me right now. I'm the hair in a biscuit.
I threw away the biscuit.
I feel like a thrown away biscuit.
hair and a biscuit. That's and then you bite into it and the just the long hair is in your teeth. You're like, where they
I'm all eating it. You're welcome.
Look, as gross as it is, everybody heard that and understood what I was trying to say. That's a good metaphor.
A real thing. And then it gets caught in your teeth and you're dragging it out. You're like, whose hair was this? Did it come from me? Did it come from someone I know?
Well, it didn't come from me because I don't have any goddamn hair. So.
Could be a beard hair. You got beard.
Oh, no. If it was a beard hair, you would know.
Yeah, it's a different consistency.
It's a chin pube.
Yes. Yeah. And when you see a beard hair, you always have to like triple question, is that really a beard hair?
Wait, if it was a beard,
it could be a different kind of poop.
Yes. Yeah, I wonder where that hair came from. Why the fuck are we talking about this? Cornell is here. Chris is here. How are you guys doing?
Rubbing your balls in the biscuit batter.
Clearly, we're stuck on beer batter ball biscuits, so I don't even know anymore. Nipple hair.
Oh, my lord.
That's how I'm doing it.
It's good. That and MP3 players. That's the topic du jour.
We're old, guys. Once upon a time,
we used to be a modern day trendsetter. Yeah.
We used to take full size records and just shove them into these MP3 player things. It would consume the record and spit out its innards. And then what would remain?
And that was called Napster.
Speaking of fitting a lot of music on a tiny little thing, Pernell, I saw that you got a new SD card for your Switch.
Yeah, I cracked. I ended up buying it. I figured between like a credit card, a car payment refund and my stimulus payment, I was sitting on like an extra 16 or so. So I was like, you know, I'm still responsible if I spend like a sixth of that on a memory card. So I ended up buying the 1 terabyte micro SD. But then a friend put a little bit of scare into me, so I'm going to do a little bit of research on it because it was that guy who apparently fried his Switch by putting a terabyte SD card in it. So I don't know if it was with the card or if it was that specific card, but I need to do a little bit more research. But on the positive, on a brief dive into it without going too far in, I only could find accounts from that one guy across every outlet I looked at. And I can't imagine he's the only person who thought, I'm going to buy a 1 terabyte card for my Switch that come along in the last half a year. So,
yeah.
So I'm hoping that that was just like a fluke on his part, and it's not going to actually happen if I use it on my system. But I do have the card. It's sitting there looking all googly. And then I got to figure out how to transfer all the data over, though. I'm thinking about it might just be saved quicker-ish to just download all the games again, because the save files, from what I recall, are stored on the console somehow. Like, it just, they'll all be on the console. It's just the game data itself that you have to download.
Oh, hell if I know. I don't know what the fuck Nintendo does with their stuff.
I know it's a breakfast now, and that's pretty cool.
It's breakfast? What?
I'm old. It was an old reference.
Nintendo breakfast cereal. Oh, Jesus.
That's right. I used to eat it with my record player while it played in the corner. It was great.
Some other news, Pernell, I hear that you started playing a game, huh?
Yeah, though I still think this is probably a one-sided deal being fulfilled here. I did start Ori and the Blind Forest. So far, I am
not enjoying... even the Will and the Wisp yet, though.
Why would I do that? That's the sequel. If anything, that one's expected. I'm expecting that to be the better game. So to play that one first would kind of ruin the first one for me, I would think, or at least make it not as effective as it would have been if I started there. So I went with the original guy first, and I am enjoying it. Though, I mean, I hope this changes later, because the only gripe I find myself having was that this is just going to sound weird, but I'm like, I'm still in the woods. The entire game is in the woods. Do you go to like a fireworks factory or some sort of bomb? I don't know. But like, it's like, okay, here's a new environment. What is it? Another forest. Like, oh, Jesus. But this forest is brown.
But for now, what's the name of the game?
Oh, Ori in the Blind Forest. See, that's the problem. Why can't it? The forest, it could be the centerpiece. He could have to go to outside the forest to save the blind forest, to give it sight again. Go, where does he get the glasses from? Glasses factory. He has to go there for a bit. He has to acquire all the parts to run them through the machine to get glasses large enough to fit onto a forest. It's perfect. It would work.
Fucking glasses factory.
I would be down for that. Ori and the Spectacle Shopper. That's a game. That is a game. But aside from like that random nitpick, though, I do enjoy it. I have been enjoying it. I like it has a solid sense of exploration. I like the fact that even though at first I was like, oh, come on, how do you not start with a wall jump? You get it so fast that you barely even notice you didn't have it at all. So, and once you get the wall jump, you start to get that real sense of momentum and exploration. So you're hopping and bopping. Though one thing that bugged me a little, but I think this is just, I got to accept that it's not the game, is that due to the way he attacks, he feels so detached from the combat in a lot of ways, because he's running and there's a wisp that's just like shooting fireballs out from behind him at whatever's around. You're just like, see an enemy, just mash the button. Where do you aim? Doesn't fucking matter. The fireball does all the work. You just have to watch, you know? And it's an interesting thing to sit there and see, like, it focuses all the effort of the player on the platforming and evasion, because you don't have to aim any of your attacks. You're just there. So that's an interesting mechanic, because typically any other game or most games, you usually have to be in the melee. You have to be in the skirmish. You have to be aiming your attack. You have to get in and then get out. But in this game, it's just like, mash that button. They'll die eventually. But it may sound like I'm like, you know, down talking the game or whatever, but quite the contrary. I do see myself playing more of it and even possibly seeing it to the end.
You should. It is a very good game.
Oh, it is. I'm enjoying it. I am very much enjoying it.
Cole, do you have any questions for him about it?
No.
Helpful. You've been on his ass.
Wanted him to play it. I don't have any questions. I just wanted him to play it, and he didn't, so I'm content.
What if I came back and was like, this is the worst game I've ever played in my life? Ori's a little
bit. Ori, I knew you wouldn't do that.
I don't know. I mean, I could have been like, Ori is so featureless. He's just a white sprite thingy.
But that's not true, because if you'd played it, if you'd said that shit, I'd been like, this bitch is lying to me. He can't play it. Because it's not true.
All the enemies are blobs.
You're a blob, Purnell.
Yeah. Ooh. You're the hair of the biscuit now.
Wow. Getting so Ori-fensive over here. I had no fucking into. Damn. Oh, my God. But, yeah, I do like the game. But now the real question is, so when are you going to start playing any game I'd recommend?
When little bunnies pop up in my garden and tell me to.
They do. They
have. You know what was funny was you posted that picture and I had edited it. For those not familiar, I've been hounding Purnell on Facebook. Like, every time he posts, I'm like, that ain't Ori. I don't care what the fuck he's doing. This man could be eating a sandwich, sitting by the lake in I don't know, Colorado or some shit. Wherever there's lakes.
Wherever there's a lake, I'll be there asking about Ori.
And I'm going to be like popping up out the water with my aquaphobic ass and be like, so how come you ain't playing Ori? And so...
Lake has changed over the years.
he recently posted an image of a bunny rabbit, a wild bunny, in his yard. And within 4 minutes, of him posting that image, I had posted another version of it that had been edited to give the bunny a speech bubble that said, "Shouldn't you be playing Ori?" And I straight up even went so far as to use the actual Ori logo.
True, she did.
Which makes me think you've somehow been sitting on that image waiting for someone in the world to post that picture of the bunny.
No, she got the image from me.
No,
I
did. No, I'm convinced she's been sitting on that image waiting.
Took me for 4 minutes to copy his, edit it, post it back to him.
I bet what it is, Joe might be onto something. She had the speech bubble ready. She just needed the image to slap it onto.
The template was open and ready to go.
I saved it, so now it is.
This rabbit knows. But what if it's like? What if I was like, I think I hear voices coming from my cupcake. You do. Why aren't you playing Ori? You're under arrest. This is a picture of Pernell getting arrested for jaywalking. I don't fucking know. And it's like, you're under arrest for not playing Ori. Like, damn. Cole was ready for this shit. But
she's on the ball.
I can't, but I won't. I can't really quite fault it because it is a good game. She wasn't like recommending like playing, you know, Hopscotch Quest or some crap.
Which can come out like something I would play.
Hopscotch Quest. I mean, you're looking for each individual square. Without the squares, you can't hop the scotch. And then it's just a sad child on the playground waiting for recess to end. It would be depressing.
What the hell are you talking about?
Hopscotch Quest. It's a game. It's a fantastic game that doesn't exist. But now someone's going to make it. You know, glory.
From Rad Lake Games coming next week.
The easiest achievement. Yeah, she'll have to get one square. Done.
Yeah.
Full platinum. Oh my kid, I still love their games. They make good stuff.
They
publish stuff.
Oh man, so should we talk reviews? Or is there anything that anyone else wanted to discuss before we dive into these?
Only if it's Rattalake Games.
Actually, I don't think we have any Rattalake as this episode.
That's my goodness.
Rarity.
I did finally get Gun Crazy and complete it.
Nice.
Yeah.
Did it all in the same 10 minutes.
It was good. It was, I was like, okay, this is a thing. And also somehow I managed to fuck up the last achievement and had to start over from scratch to do it again. I'm not sure what I did.
What was the last achievement?
Beat level 2.
Nice.
And so like I had to start all over and beat level 1 again. I was like, well, son of a bitch.
Oh man, that is harsh.
That was horrible. That was the longest
2 minutes of your life.
It was a whole 10 minutes of my 2 a.m. play session. And I was horribly distraught over it. And then I popped it and went on about my life.
I stay about my feelings on Gun Crazy, though. It's like, it feels like someone was like, I'm learning how to make games. And they made a competent game. Just now that they're like, okay, your game works, you know, fill it with stuff. It's like Mega Man 1 before Mega Man 2.
Yeah.
Like Mega Man 1 fought like one enemy on every level. It's like, what the hell? Where's the monster variety at? And then Mega Man 2 is like, now you got birds that shit eggs and fan men. Somebody woke up.
Somebody woke up, now there's fan man.
And it's amazing when you think about it, too, because when you really lay on a table, people love Mega Man, and he's always been around, old, young, people like Mega Man, but you never, ever hear anybody talk about the first game, and I'm pretty sure that's why. Like, one is just kind of like, it had to exist so that we could get two.
And I actually really like one, and it was made by only 6 people, if you didn't
know. Really?
Yeah, the dev team for that game was 6 people.
Was one of them Bun Bun?
No, actually, Bun Bun didn't come along until 3.
Oh, damn.
Manami Matsumai is the composer for 1.
Oh, okay. Yeah, the music in 1 was fantastic. I still acknowledge that.
Yeah.
Like, in fact, and it's not even that the game was bad. Like, I played it through, though
it's just really hard.
It's very difficult. And like I said, I feel like it's lacking a certain soul that didn't come until later. But overall, the game is still playable. I still can go back, but it's just like, I don't think anyone ever talks about it. I never heard anybody discuss the game. It's always like Mega Man 2 and up. And like, but 1 exists, but then again.
Yeah, they're fun. The other fun thing that you can do with Mega Man 1 is put a Game Genie on, and then the audio gets destroyed.
Really?
How?
Yeah. Oh, it's just a glitchy mess. Just YouTube Mega Man soundtrack with Game Genie. There's even an NSF file for it because somebody, actually somebody I know personally, decided to rip it.
Weird.
Yeah. Yeah. Mega Man 2 is the same way.
Oh, that's something I didn't expect.
They didn't need a Game Genie for Mega Man 2.
Shit, that really, that would have made me not want to play, use Game Genie for those games. Like, well, is this a piece of crap? Take it back to the store. What's wrong with your Game Genie, sir? It's a piece of shit. It broke Mega Man music.
I'm writing a stern letter to Galoob.
Dear Galoob.
Your name is great. Your product is not. Make with the good good.
Your unauthorized cheat device broke my game.
Did you know that Game Genie was authorized by Sega?
Yeah.
It was an authorized Sega product on the Genesis.
I did not know that, actually.
Yeah. Trivia.
Yay. Anyway, reviews. Should we get to these?
Mm-hmm.
Sure. Let's talk more about Galoob.
No, Purnell, you got a lot to talk about, Purnell. This is like the Purnell episode.
It is, yep. Yeah.
I play a lot of Game Genie. I watched a lot of Ghostbusters. I'm ready.
Are you ready?
Wait,
are you
Ghostbusters
sure?
Or the real Ghostbusters?
The one sponsored by Galoob.
Oh.
That's correct. I'm full of shit.
So, first thing to talk about tonight is called Game of Ham. Ham stands for Hating All Mankind. You can get more info on the game or place an order for it at gameofham.com, and the adult set is available now for $39.99. Purnell, what is Game of Ham?
So, to give an easy lead-in before I talk about the rest of what makes it different, is that, have you played Cards Against Humanity?
Yes.
Well, at the core, you've played Game of Ham by the default base. And what I mean by that is you usually start out with a series of cards that are played to a judge who's reading off a scenario. And your card is hopefully the one that makes the judge and the audience laugh the most when it's read in companion, as a companion to it. But time to talk about the actual full-on game. What makes Game of Ham special? Because there's a lot of games out there that have been like, hey, Cards Against Humanity exists. I want to make the same thing, but just with different cards and a new name. Crabs are Just Humanity, Spankings Are for Wussies, whatever number of names you can come up with. But what I like about this game and why it's actually worth discussing is because this is more like someone said, we've played Cards Against Humanity, but it'd be nice if we could make an actual game out of it. Like an actual game where you feel like you're trying to win using some sort of methodology. So what they did was they decided that they provided the game with a board. So there's four cards that come inside of the game that are dual-sided, and they have a bunch of spaces on top of them, various colors and with numbers on top, and I'll get into that in a little bit. When you build the board at the beginning of the game, you line them up from left to right. You can match them up however you want to basically construct a layout for a board, as long as, in the end, the goal space is at the end of one of the sides. So what happens now is, each character gets 10 pink cards. These pink cards are essentially like various like descriptives, such as living on the Iron Ridge diet of children's blood, or naked old people greasing each other up, peeing in lemonade, and of course, shoot, I'm shouting the wrong person's name out while making love. You know, nice. Things like
that. Oh, Lord.
So you take each player gets 10 of those cards, and the judge will read off one of the black cards, such as, which also, by the way, this goes perfect with the living off children's blood card I read earlier. New evidence reveals that blank is the true origin of HIV/AIDS. Or, during fall, kids like to go to see professionals extract blank from blank and make syrup from it.
Oh, Lord.
So what ends up happening is the judge will read one of these cards off. Then the players will play the number of cards that is requested on the card. Sometimes it's one, sometimes it's two, and sometimes it may even be three. You play that number of cards, and then the judge will read them all off in sequence, and then whoever has the funnier card will win the gray card or whatever. Now, here's where things get different from Cards Against Humanity in that regard. When the player gets that gray card, there are two numbers printed at the bottom of it. The player chooses one of those numbers, and that determines how many spaces he wants to move. He can move a total number of spaces in one direction. He can move the difference between the two numbers. So you can move, if you have like a 1 and a 5 at the bottom, you can move 4 spaces, or you can move 1 space, or you can move 5 spaces. And you're moving along the board. And depending on where you stop, things happen. You stay on the number space, you go that many spaces again further up, but you don't get a prize from where you land. If you land on a color space, you will draw a colored card matching the color of the space. There are 4 different colors in the game. Green, yellow, red, and orange. And these are all like sort of power-up cards. And they all, each color deals with a specific type. So like the yellow cards are all like cards that force people to skip turns. So they can't play 4 set. Green cards are particularly built around basically making them choose another card. So let's say, for example, the judge is doing a round. That person's like, oh, this card is freaking perfect. I'm going to play this card. You can go, nah, no, you're not. Once they play the card, you can make them get rid of it and have to choose something different. So basically just screws them over and makes them choose a card they're not as confident in playing. And then there's the other set, the red cards, allows you to switch out your cards if you hate your hand. It lets you kind of modify your hand a bit. And lastly, the orange cards will basically let you play additional cards in the round. So it lets you stack the deck. So when the judge is reading, let's say it's 4 players in the game, one player is the judge, and there's 3 players each dropping 1 card. You can go, nah, I'm going to play this orange card. So now I'm going to play 3 sets of cards. Now I have 3 times the chance of winning this round because he could pick any of my cards. So stuff like that. So I kind of like that that element exists in the game to say, okay, now I'm going to do these different things. And I can consciously make these decisions. And also in each of those decks, there are a few. The reason why they are decks instead of just like, here, just take the fourth player card, is that mixed in there, there will be some odd rare cards that will allow you to like actually kick players back on the board to different spaces. So you might just say, no, I'm going to make you go back to that gray space or what have you. So now, in addition to what I just described, when you take these gray cards from earlier that allows you to choose your space movement, they have letters printed on the back of them. H-A-M-M. They spell, you guessed it, ham. Ham, bitch.
Yay.
Now, what the purpose of that is if you can get the cards to spell out ham and someone plays an effect card on you, you can discard those 3 cards to negate the effect that they play on you. So it benefits you to try to win multiple rounds for the purpose of getting enough cards that have the potential to spell ham so you can be prepared to defend yourself. Now, the end of the game, the base rule, because there's a bunch of rule modifiers that you can play that are mentioned in the rule book if you want to go down that road. But the typical way to end the game is to get to the goal space on the board and land exactly on it. So whereas normally you could just get a 5 and like, okay, well, I got 5, but I only need to go 4. Ha ha, I win. Now you have to actually get 4 spaces to win. So you can't overshoot. You could find yourself stuck looping back and forth. But due to the fact that there are other ways to get cards, such as like doing like the gimme rule where you can just like give a person a card and allows you to move a space, for example, there are ways to get around that and not have yourself caught in a loop or whatever. So for the most part, aside from going down the rabbit hole discussing every rule version, which I am not going to do, but there are a fair number of them. For the most part, this game is, like I said, it's Cards Against Humanity, but with some gamey rule variations to kind of shake things up a bit. And overall, I'm fine with the game. Like when I play Cards Against Humanity in general, I do enjoy the game. But I have always been that guy that's like, you know, I typically don't want to play this so much because it's not really a game. It's just killing time. Like, I'm laughing. I'm having fun. Don't get me wrong. But if I want to play a game, I want to play a game. And I don't look at Cards Against Humanity as like being a game in that regard. This could be that happy medium where I'm like, well, I guess I want to laugh at some rude cards, but I could try to win by getting to the end space. So I'll give this a shot.
Speaking of happy, you know what makes me happy?
The fact that
our good friend Victor X came in and dropped 1,000 biddies in chat. Victor, thank you so much. Norg, take it away.
Dropping bits! Ah! All over your fucking face! Ah! Wet pancakes!
Wet pancakes indeed, George. Thank you so much, Vic. It means a lot. I very much appreciate you dropping the biddies. But Purnell, you were saying Game of Ham. Let's put this into perspective. It costs $40. What do you think of the package? Is it worth picking up?
I honestly think it is worth the money that it costs to do that, because you lay it on a table for people who aren't familiar but with these styles of game. Cards Against Humanity sells a box called the Bigger Blacker Box. The box cost $25, and that box was nothing but a box and one card cut underneath the lid that you had to cut open with a cut out with a box cutter. People bought that in droves. That wasn't even the game. It was just a box to store shit in.
I bought that.
I did too.
Oh my God.
So with that said, this game is 40. It's a game and a fair number of cards to start your set off with. And I believe they're actually doing like a lot. They have some print and play add-ons, and possibly they may even end up just selling the card expansions too. And furthermore, if you really want to go down that rabbit hole and you want to get dicey, you could buy this game, play with it, then take your Cards Against Humanity cards using the ham cards and write the numbers from those cards onto the Cards Against Humanity judge cards just to add on to the deck. So to me, I think this is a good one to start the party off with. If you want to branch out to other ones, go for it. But this is a good way to start it, I think.
Nice.
And it's nothing stopping you from even just playing this like traditional Cards Against Humanity if you don't want to do the whole board and stuff. So it just gives you variety and options to boot.
Awesome. That sounds really cool. I'm going to have to pick this up so that when I have a party, once this whole lockdown quarantine bullshit's over, we can play Game of Ham and get stupid and crazy.
I'm off. I would play that. I would win.
Bring it. Come up, visit. We'll all party again, and you could bring it up, and you could do that, and then you could show us La Mulana.
Oh, mercy. I don't know if anybody wants to see that. You got to play La Mulana. You got to play it. It's an experience, man. You're just trying to dodge play. You got to play that game.
Oh, Lord. Well, next game to talk about is called Hatsune Miku Project Diva Megamix, developed by Krypton Future Media, published by Sega, released May 15th on the Switch for $39.99. A Megamix pack with 36 bonus songs is available for $59.99. Hatsune Miku makes her Nintendo Switch debut, and Hatsune Miku Project Diva Megamix take the stage no matter where or when. Her music will be sure to reach your heart. Purnell, tell us about this one.
Well, Hatsune Miku came out at a pretty convenient time for me, because not too long ago I got into the idea of I had the idea of wanting to go back to play my copy of Hatsune Miku Project Diva F on the PS3, only to learn that I hate configuring rhythm games on my TV to play because lag is bullshit on TVs.
Yeah, calibration is a bitch.
I don't want to deal with any of it. So, lo and behold, not even joking, like 2 days later, this review code comes down the pike. I'm like, yeah, I want to review this game. I just wanted to try to play Hatsune Miku. So, it came down, and before I even talk about the game proper, I'm just going to flat out spoil it. I was pleased with this product. I am happy with it. But what is it for people who have no idea what the hell Hatsune Miku is, aside from a crazy weird word pair? So, it is a rhythm game that features a series of vocaloids, which are essentially computer voice modulated singers. And the idea behind the base game is that you choose a song, and on the main screen, a series of like letters or arrows pertaining to the face buttons and the actual arrows on the cross pad will move onto the screen from out the sides. And they move towards a silhouette on the screen, like a silhouette that's just like basic overlap would be the letter or shape direction. And like once it overlaps it, you have to press the button for the timing. So letter comes in off the screen, goes to its silhouette point. You have to match the button press the timing. There you go. That's the rhythm. And a lot of these symbols and a lot of these letters will come onto the screen, and you have to hit them all in sequence. It's a very simple game by that concept of style description, but it's actually very intense when you get to the higher difficulties, and the music of which you are playing these things to is a lot of fun. And in addition to that normal style of button press, sometimes you'll get sequences where you have to press like multiple buttons together. Sometimes you'll get scenarios where you have to like flick the thumbsticks left or right. And for the most part, that's the game, but it's a fantastic game because you find yourself tapping to the beat. You want to master the songs. You want to get high scores on them. And there's 101 songs on the game with which you try to do this on.
Which, that's a lot of songs.
There's a good number of them. And then in addition, there's like, I guess, like you said, there's DLC for the game too, which, Sega, if you're interested, send that over to them too. But if you don't want to, I feel content with what I got here, though I may end up getting the DLC anyway because I want to play some of these other songs. But a second, give it to me. The game itself is a lot of fun, though. And that's just the base mode. So the base mode of the game is worth the money by itself. And while the other stuff could go either way, which I'll talk about in a second, even if you're not interested in that stuff, I would say the game is worth the money just for the default product that you get. Now, the individual music videos that play for each song, they have character models that overlay them, typically based around the song itself. So, for example, it might be a song like Sadistic Music Factory, and the character for that song is Miku. So her character model dances and sings throughout the song. However, you can go into a customization menu and change Miku's clothes if you want by spending VP that you earn from playing songs to buy her new clothing and accessories, dress her up, and then put that version of her in the song to dance for the video. Sometimes you can actually swap out Miku entirely and put in other Vocaloid characters that are in the game franchise, like Ren and Lin, or that redhead girl, Luca or something. I don't remember her name. But essentially, you can swap the other characters in and have them sing the part, sing and dance the parts of the songs that you want them in. So it's a sort of like visual customization option that you can throw with the game. And in addition to that, there's also another gameplay mode style in this called Mix Mode. And personally, I will say that I wasn't too fond of it, but that's just me. You might like it more. What the heck am I talking about? Well, it's meant to be played with the Joy-Cons detached from the system. So if you want to play it off on the TV or the system, like kind of like on the kickstand, which I did at work actually a couple times, the idea is that you take the Joy-Cons off, turn on mix mode while the song is playing. Instead of the letters and directions flying off the sides of the screen, what's happening is there's actually like blue and red lines just kind of coming from the top of the screen going to the bottom. And the Joy-Cons are held upright, sort of like you're holding a flight stick or something. I don't know. So you're basically holding your arms out and you're holding the Joy-Con up. Like you're giving it a thumbs up. That's a good way to describe it. It's like you're giving a thumbs up and you're holding the Joy-Con in your hand. Now, as these things are coming down, you have to tilt the Joy-Con left or right in each hand to move the bar at the bottom, the two bars at the bottom, left and right, so that they overlay the bars that are falling from the top of the screen, and you press the button to time when they overlap each other. So it's sort
that
of like
is cool.
It is, but the problem I have is I wasn't sure if it was just the way that it was calibrated for me, but I couldn't quite get it to measure properly. Like, it's like, first of all, like the way they describe it in the game, it's supposed to feel like you're like pretty much like you're tilting glow sticks. Like your hand is out, tipping your hand left, right. Ooh, yeah, party, baby. But when I was playing the game, it seemed like it was only really working if I was like flicking it in and out, like I was casting a fishing line. So I don't know what was going on with my play, but it wasn't tilting the way I was expecting it to, and I was having a hard time adjusting to it. So it's one of those things where it's like, your mileage may vary in this mode, but I'll always be the guy that says I'm fine with more as opposed to less. It's another mode you can play. It's not like it's the only mode you play. So if you end up liking this mode, hey, you got two ways to play this game, and that's freaking swank. And fun fact, I didn't see this mode when I was playing it, so I don't know if I have to do something or download an update for it, or if I just got it selected somehow. But apparently, there's also a mode called like tap mode or something in the game. And if I'm wrong, then kick me in the butt. You know what? I'm not going to talk about that because I might be wrong. And I might be thinking about something way off. But for the most part, mixed mode and regular mode are where it's at. And I'm honestly fine with this game at what I've experienced and what I've played. I'd recommend it wholeheartedly. And honestly, I play this game. I've been playing this game quite a bit, coupled with the fact that I don't have to break out my freaking controller anymore, my freaking Ren and Lin popping looking controller. I can just play it right off the Switch, be happy, put it down, be done. It's a good time. And no lag config, though it's available if you need it.
Well, that's good. If you hook it up to a TV, I guess.
Yeah.
Well, overall, $40, your verdict?
Worth that candy.
Cool beans.
Jelly beans?
I don't know, Cole. What kind of beans?
Kidney beans.
There you go.
Why would you do that, Cole? Jesus.
It's just for that reaction.
Jesus wept, Cole. Jesus wept.
Oh, my Lord. All right. Next game to talk about is called Gravity Rider Zero, developed by Vivid Games, published by Cubic Games, released May 8th on the Switch for $6.99. Ride, jump, and challenge gravity. The bike balancing game is about two things, getting cool rides and pure racing. Chris, tell us about Gravity Rider Zero.
Only two things in life. What was that again?
Getting cool rides and pure racing.
And pure racing. Oh my goodness. Okay, so yeah, Gravity Rider Zero. So I was actually pleasantly surprised by this one, because I don't know, I downloaded enough games that look like this on the preview screen, or you know, like what do they call it, the icon?
Yeah.
And then like load them up, and it's just like some Gilson B. Pontes crap.
Oh no.
You know, in spirit.
Gilson.
Gilson. But no, actually, once you get into it. So the best way to compare, the best thing to compare this game to is Excitebike. You basically select your vehicle. Of course, you only have one vehicle to start with. And you select your courses, which are cleverly named 01, 02, 03, and so forth. We get up into 04. 05, up to 33, it looks like. Maybe more, who knows. But yeah, the whole thing is that basically once you select a course, you go into three stages. Oh, of course, it does a tutorial for you, so that's really nice. Kind of teaches you how to do things. But yeah, once you get into a course, it basically gives you three stages. And when you get through the stages, they vary in ways that I'll explain in a second. But when you get to the end of all three of them, there's certain requirements that you're supposed to meet, depending on which stage. Sometimes it's just, you know, complete the level. Sometimes it's play a stage, the combined stages in a certain amount of time, and, you know, like some things like that. And, of course, there's one that's, you know, don't lose a heart. You lose a heart if you crash, which more about that in a second. And, if depending on how you do at the end, you basically get rewarded with experience points, which go towards unlocking new vehicles, and then these purple points, which basically is your currency, where you get to purchase new paint jobs for your vehicles, you know, different things like that, like just ways to customize things. You can even customize the light trail that comes off the back of your racer, which is actually kind of fun in a way that I'll get to. But yeah, so like basically it's a race, quote unquote, but you're not actually, all you're doing is controlling the tilt and just holding down the accelerator button when you need to and stopping when you need to. This is done with the right and left trigger buttons. Respectively, one's A also accelerates, but A or RL will accelerate, and the left trigger will brake. Which sometimes, you know, the courses aren't just races. Like sometimes it's an obstacle course. Like most of them are obstacle courses, really. And sometimes you actually do have to completely stop yourself, like to ride down an elevator or something like that. And they're nice about it because they like actually tell you to slow down, and then when you push the button, and it like slows down the whole action of the race, and then you know once you push the button, it goes back to regular speed so that you can do that. So yeah, that's basically what you do, and you can replay stages. You get, of course, rated on a 3-star system depending on whether you met all three of the requirements by the end, and basically as the more stages that you beat to it, get at least 1 star, which of course the 1 star is just complete the levels, like no matter what it takes. Then it unlocks the next level. But like I said, the more stars you get unlocked, the more currency you get. And again, that all goes towards customizing your bike or other vehicle, actually. So the first couple are bikes, but then you get a, what do you call it? Like it's a 4-wheeler buggy kind of thing. And immediately what I did was I unlocked the paint job that's just called USA. And
oh, no.
It makes it a big American flag. And then there's an interesting, like, okay, so usually you purchase different kinds of trail, like I said, that come off of the back of your rider as you're racing. So like the original is a blue streak, and then you can buy like a yellow streak. And of course you get these as you gain levels of experience, you get more unlocked and available. But there's one in particular for just the four-wheeler called Off-Road. And it's if you can complete a double front flip or a double back flip, which I'll, you know, talk about in a second. But it it is basically a constant stream of grass and mud, ghost grass and mud. So you look like you're riding an American lawnmower. And that's what beautiful. I've been racing on. Yeah, that's what I, all that to say that that's what I've been racing on the most. Yeah, I even, you know, unlocked a jet bike and have barely used it because I love my American lawnmower. So yeah, and you know, it's actually kind of cool because you can preview like all of the different like bikes that you can unlock, and there's like there's some real creative ones. You can actually look like they're not silhouetted out. I love that actually because it really gives you something to strive for. For instance, if you collect 56 stars across the stages, then you can unlock a unicorn motorcycle that is to be, you have to see it. It's amazing. So yeah, like basically, you know, there's just different things. Like, when you're racing, like I said, you actually only can tilt your bike backwards or forwards. You actually can't change lanes. You can't bump into other riders. You're on a rail. So you don't actually have to worry about crashing that way. You have to worry about crashing about 1,000 other ways.
Yeah, because this, the more you talk about it, the more it sounds like the trial series. I'm not sure if you've played any of those.
I don't think so.
You should look into that series.
Yeah. But you know, it does remind me of Excitebike because like if you tilt back too far, of course, you, you end up, you know, rolling backwards and your bike crushes your guy. And, you know, it's all done in a fun ragdoll sort of way. And, you know, it just makes you lose time. And of course you have, three crashes that you can do before you actually have to start paying for more continues or else you have to quit. The continues only cost 10 of the, monies, but, you know, and like easily accumulate like thousands of monies. So it's not like a big deal. I, you know, you'd really only whip it out if like you really, really wanted to just get to the end of the level, you know, you just keep dropping in quarters. Personally,
rich kid strats.
Exactly. I just continue every time. But, and of course, you know, you need to have a deathless run to get all 3 stars. But, yeah, so like, you have to make sure that your bike is balanced. And also that, changes the way you land your bike, of course, affects your speed. And if you tilt the control all the way back or all the way forward, you can do a backflip or a front flip. Or if you use your boost, which is actually the left bumper button, to get you a super boost, which, by the way, is extremely dangerous to do if you're not trying not to crash into things. But if you use a boost to like go up a ramp that's like steep enough, you can pull off a double front flip or a double back flip. And like I said, that'll unlock a your constant stream of ghost grass for a certain vehicle. And so yeah, like there's, you know, tricks that you can pull. And also once you land, if you do a flip and then land it, you actually get a speed boost, which is great. You know, speed boosts are good for the time trial thing. Sometimes the game will put other racers in the race, and I'm not sure why they do that, because I've yet to see a requirement that says, you know, place, you know, get first place or something like that. It's always like time based, so I'm not too sure. And then lastly, you know, once you go back to replay a stage for like extra experience points or what have you, if you just want to try and get all the stars, the game's nice about putting a little ghost in there of your best performance, so you get to race against yourself. And if yourself happened to boost at the last second and then crash horribly right after the finish line, then that's saved permanently until you beat that time, which is actually the case for me in level 1. In the very first level, I nosedove and then my crossed the finish line, and then my driver got flung off and then and then hit a wall, and then the bike hit him.
That's beautiful.
That's just on there. That's just on there now. This game is really a lot of fun, and they perfectly toe that line between like making you want to play more to get the collectibles and just, you know, trying to actually play the game and get the best performance. Like, you know, driving across everything from a bunch of barrels to like dodging spikes to like doing all this other crazy stuff. And I really enjoy it. Like, it's not hugely ambitious as a game. Like, your character, you know, you don't do anything with characters. There's no story. There's, again, not really any racing, except for pure racing. But hey, I really quite like this one.
Well, then for $7, what's your verdict?
Easily worth it. If you're a fan of Excitebike, go ahead and check this one out. It's a nice little update on the formula. If you are looking for a traditional racing game, then this is not one of those. And those are actually, I mean, you might as well get Gear Club Unlimited or something on the one of those times when it goes down to $2. It's been doing that lately.
I like Gear Club, though. That's a solid racer.
No, I do. That's what I'm saying. Like, yeah. Just get that for like $2 when it goes on sale if you want a traditional racer. But yeah, this one is a less traditional thing, but it's also very fun and worth your time.
Cool. All right. Next game to talk about is called Bullet Beat, developed by Turnox, published by Zeitalon, or I have no idea how to say this,
company's name.
Zeitalon. It released May 19th on Xbox One for $4.99. Bullet Beat is a shoot 'em up where everything at the level is in tune with the music, even the shooting. Keep the combo to get stronger. Cole, tell us about Bullet Beat.
So it's a pretty simple game. I had some misconceptions about it being more rhythm based, but it's definitely more of a bullet hell. And not even so much of a shmup. Although you do shoot, it takes a lot to actually kill anything, and you're going to spend far more time just dodging shit. I was surprised at how easy it was, despite being a bullet hell, which I also wasn't necessarily mad about. Sometimes you just want to get through it and call it a day. And so I was very pleasantly surprised that even with being a bullet hell, it was maybe an hour and a half to actually 1K the game. And that was with taking breaks and getting up and doing other things. So who knows how long it actually took me, but it wasn't that long. There is an endless mode, but there's also an arcade like campaign mode, with three different difficulties. I will say I played it on the easier difficulty, which is probably why I was like, yeah, this isn't so bad. It definitely ramps up though.
Yeah.
In the harder difficulties. And I was like, I ain't got time for that. I'm old and I got arthritis. So, you know, sometimes you just have to take things as they are and know your place. So I played it on casual. If you're playing the arcade mode, there are 8 levels. However, level 8 is a boss rush and it is broken down into 3 sub-levels instead. So rather than having like one level 8 where you have like checkpoints, because there aren't any checkpoints in the other ones, they break it down into sub-levels and you can play them individually. You can go back and play in whatever order you want once they've been unlocked. You're not forced into every time you want to play level 8-3, going back and playing level 8-1, 8-2 first. Which is nice. It gives you some variation. I will say I have one major gripe about the game, and that is that none of the enemies have any kind of indication as to how long they're surviving for. It does not like give you any kind of outline or color indication for the game. They're basically just your little ship, which is kind of U-shaped versus every other shape. There's squares, there's triangles, there's semicircles poking out here and there. it's not graphically intensive, but it does have a lack of information as far as not making it visible to, you know, there's no health bars, or you can see that you're hitting things because there's like a little bit of bullet splatter, like your empty shell casings go, he's been quiet this whole time. I started talking. He's like, oh, we're having a party now. But there's, you know, your empty shell casings kind of go flying around. So you know that you're actually shooting. You can tell that they're hitting. But whether or not it's doing any damage is up in the air. There's one specific level, level six, where you have to hit two circles that are kind of blocked. And you have to have a special power-up that splits your gunfire to actually hit the two blocks at the same time. I spent the longest time ever on level six with no idea if I was succeeding, if I was failing. I knew I was surviving, but I didn't know what the fuck else I was supposed to do. Some kind of indication, like letting it glow red if you're getting it down to where it's almost dead, or a health bar anywhere on the screen would be really helpful. You do have a health bar. It is at the bottom of the screen. One interesting thing, though, is if the screen is shifting, your health bar can kind of slide up and down. But it doesn't actually affect anything long enough for you to not know if you've got any health at all. Also, health on casual health and power-ups and stuff just drop all over the place. So if you fail, I don't know what to tell you. Literally any, I could have called it a Rataleika game for how easy it is to beat it on casual, with the exception of not knowing if you're actually making any progress on a boss or not.
No. That was my gripe with the game too, is you could shoot at a boss for 20 minutes and you don't know if you're doing anything until the game is just like, okay, you're done.
Right. Yeah, it just kind of, like, there was at one point, the first time I did level six, I literally spent, I would say, at least 15 minutes playing into it with no idea of whether or not I was succeeding or not. It wasn't until my second gripe is about to come up. It wasn't until I fucked up. I pressed pause because I went to go eat dinner. And when I came back, I just pressed A out of habit, and when you press pause, the game automatically puts you on the menu and highlights restart instead of resume. That's a no-no. That shouldn't be a thing. It is a thing. It is an unfortunate thing. I hope they listen. I hope they consider changing that, because I had literally spent a disgusting amount of time trying to figure out level six, only to have to start it all over again.
Oh, man.
Once I did start it over again, I beat it in like 4 minutes. I was like, oh, this is what I do. It's fine. And then the funny thing is, level seven, I knocked it out in like a minute and a half. I was like, what is this? I don't understand why some of the levels go on too long. And some of them are just like, yeah, you did it. And I'm like, but I didn't push a button yet. It's a little erratic. But overall, I think it's a pretty fun little bullet hell.
And it's only $5.
Oh, boy, you cut out there on my end.
I said, and it's only $5.
Joe?
Yes. Oh, no.
Oh, no.
Skype
went kaput.
What's happening? Yeah. Can anyone else hear me? Everyone else can hear me?
I hear you now.
Okay, Cole, you can hear me? Everyone can hear me?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, Skype, by Boost Mobile.
Skype went a little unruly there.
So, $5, what do you think?
I think at $5, it's solid. It's an easy completion, and it's a pretty fun little bullet hell. It's at least on the easier difficulties, it's easy enough to get your toes wet if you're not sure that it's a genre that you even enjoy. And so I think at that price and everything, it's a buy it. Yeah.
All right.
But I would like for them to work on some of the things that need polish, just a little.
Yeah, like show us any indication that we're doing damage to the boss. Like, give us a health bar. Give us
a health bar.
Have them flash or something.
And move the restart and resume.
Yeah. There's another game coming up soon that we're going to have that same gripe with the pause menu. I have a feeling. But Next game to talk about is called Dungeon of the Endless, developed by Amplitude Studios, published by Playdigious. Released May 15th on Switch, May 19th on PS4 for $19.99. Dungeons of the Endless is the award-winning roguelike dungeon defense game in which you and your team of heroes must protect the generator of your crashed ship while exploring an ever-expanding dungeon, all while facing waves of monsters and special events as you try to find your way out. Purnell, tell us about Dungeon of the Endless.
All right, I'm going to spoil something right off the bat here. I just wanted to review this game. I asked Joe to request this game because I wanted an excuse to gush about it on the show. It's already a good game. Buy the damn thing. I've been a fan of it for years. But now it's on the Switch.
Huh? I was just going to say, yeah, I was interested in this one too, but I actually didn't want to play it myself. I'm actually wanting to hear your review of it.
Oh, yeah.
My goodness.
Which is why I interrupted you just now. Just getting right in the way of that review.
Oh, stop it, you. I'm all about that. I like the banter. I like the back and forth. That's what I live for. So what is this game that I'm so goofy about? Well, Dungeon of the Endless, the way it's designed by play is that you and your companions crash land on an alien world, and you are trying to escape from said alien world by getting from how far into the planet you're in by your ship having crashed into it to the surface. So you're basically ascending levels of your ship to get out the back of it to the surface of the planet, essentially. And the way that works is each floor is composed of a bunch of rooms that are interconnected by doors. Even if you're playing by yourself, you could have from one to four total characters running through the dungeon at a time, because at the beginning of each round, you choose a ship, and that ship determines how many passengers were originally on it, i.e. how many players are playing or how many characters are running around that session. It also determines a variety of modifiers for that session. Like, for example, there might be a ship that says if you pick this ship, all food, you get like one, you get 0.5 food instead of one food per collection. But in exchange for that, since you don't get as much food, you do twice the damage or something weird like that. A variety of different modifiers that make every play run feel different. And aside from just the modifiers on the ship themselves, you also have a ridiculous array of characters to choose from. Some of which, by the way, I don't even remember playing with in the version I play. So this might be DLC that I never got access to that's on this version of it. So, hi-yo! there's some pretty cool characters I was playing around with that I'd never seen before, which was nice. But each character has its own stats, its own special abilities associated with it, and with them they essentially determine how that character will play during your dungeon run. So, like I said earlier, the game's design is a series of interconnected rooms that you're trying to explore with a few purposes in mind. One, just to see what the hell's on the actual floor. Every time you open a door, it starts out pitch black in the room, but when you open the door, enemies will pretty much spawn if they're in there, and you have to fight them off. Attacking is done automatically by the characters. If they're in vicinity of enemies, they'll just start swinging their weapons or firing their guns until the enemies are dead, or they're dead, whichever comes first. And you never know until it happens in this game, because it's not freaking easy. After you've cleared out a room, or a series of rooms or whatever, after you clear out a room, you will see what's inside of it. Now, rooms are initially dark in this game, and the way you power them is by using a resource called dust. Dust is generated usually by killing monsters, and sometimes it's awarded when you open rooms. Now, for every 10 dust units, you can power one room. And powering rooms is very important for a few reasons. One, when you enter rooms, sometimes you might find places where you can build turrets, various turrets, or generators. Generators being things that can produce one of the three currencies in the game. Industry, which is typically used for building the turrets and some of the building structures. Science, which is used to research new technology when you find one of the event spaces that lets you research technology. And food. Food is used to heal your characters during combat sequences and is also the resource used to level your characters up. Each level up, of course, increases your stats and sometimes gives you new skills. Now, The other reason why it's important to light rooms, aside from the power of these facilities that you construct, is that as you expand out on your exploration of a floor, you have more rooms exposed. And for every room that is not being lit, i.e. powered, when you open a door, that room has a chance of spawning monsters. So if you have three dark rooms and you open a fourth door, you can have four rooms spawn monsters at once, and they all have one goal in mind. Well, two, but usually one main one, which is to rush back to the start of the floor and destroy the core that you are trying so desperately to protect. Because it's not just your lives you're trying to protect. But if that core gets blown up by enemy attacks, game's immediately over. Shut everything down. Doesn't matter if your guys are alive or not. Game's over. So the last reason why you want to explore floors, aside from the things I mentioned before, aside from looking for vents and looking for different like building structures, is to find the floor's exit. When you find the floor's exit, you are officially ready and able to trigger the escape sequence for that floor. And what happens is you have to go back to the start of the floor, pick up the energy core, and then run it to the exit. And the moment you pick that core up, every room, even the ones you didn't explore yourself, become active. And every dark room will spawn monsters infinitely until you get off the floor. So if you can't, so they can overwhelm you and kill you while you're trying to get the product to the core to the exit. And those sequences get to be pretty racy or dicey when you get to the, there's not racy, there's no sex in this game. Gets pretty dicey as you're going for to the later four. There's like 15, 20 rooms, and all those rooms are probably spawning monsters. And you're just trying for your damage to get to the exit before you're overwhelmed. Because if you stay there too long, you will be overwhelmed. It's just going to happen. So it's a beautiful concept where you're like, okay, we're at the end of the floor. We have enough dust to power six rooms, but the exit is seven or eight rooms away, and there are a number of other rooms around it. So then you're like trying to decide what rooms do we need to light the most in order to make the easiest transport possible, knowing it's still going to be a challenge. It is freaking fun. I adore this game so much. There are merchants that you'll sometimes come across that if you find them, they'll allow you to buy equipment, being armor, accessories, or weapons for your characters. And the currency used to purchase stuff could be any of the three resources that you have. So you might be, I don't know, really in need of food. You might be low on food. You come across a merchant, he's like, hey, you want this cool sword? It's going to cost you 30 food units to get it. You're like, well, fuck you, man. I'm trying to conserve food here. But people got to eat. All of a sudden, that sword isn't so valuable. Whereas it could be another time you're playing, and all of a sudden, that awesome sword you see in the store costs industry, and you're swimming in industry on this particular run. So you just shop him out, buy everything he has, because you're loaded like that. Runs like that do happen. Also, sometimes NPCs can be killed by the monsters that are running around the floors when they spawn. So interesting dynamic that could occur there if you're not careful. But quite frankly, I have been playing this game for years. I have not grown tired of it. And in addition to that, I still recommend people buy it to play it with me. I love it that freaking much. On the Switch, one thing it does lack that hurts it but doesn't kill it is it doesn't have online play, from what I can tell. If it's a possibility that comes on there later, I would hope so. It would be real freaking nice. But this version did not seem to have it. So what I ended up doing when I was playing it, it was my literal only time in the history of playing this game for years. This is the only time I've ever played it by myself. And was it bad? No. It wasn't as good as playing with my friends, but it was still actually fun. What ends up happening is if you do a run and your ship holds more than one person, which, let's be honest, most of the time, most of the ships are going to hold at least two people, sometimes up to four. You control every person. You can move them individually between the rooms, or you can select all of them and move them at once together as a unit to different rooms. Now, when you want to use their special abilities that you unlock from leveling them up, you have to have the character selected individually to press the button to trigger their ability. If you're moving them all together, you can't trigger their abilities because they all would use the same cross buttons and that would just get wonky. So it requires you to think a little bit more about who you're moving, when you're moving them, and when you're moving them to. So it changes things up a bit, but it moves so smoothly on the Switch that it was just a new way for me to play a game I already liked. So ultimately, I had fun doing it that way, too. I suck balls at it, but I had fun trying to not suck balls at it. This is a game that this will be one of the easiest recommendations I've had on this show, because, again, I've already been a fan of it. I got it on one of my favorite game consoles, and I still like playing it on there. So it's almost like, what could be wrong with it? And I couldn't find a thing about it that I didn't like. I just really hope the developer finds some sort of way to give this game online playability, because it would make this game light years better than it already is. But even without it, it is still a fantastic product that I cannot recommend enough.
Well, then $20, your official verdict?
Buy the shit out of it.
All right. I will.
Yes, sir. Do it. And it's on your favorite system, too. It's been on there, in fact.
Then I probably already have it. Let's be honest.
True, true. But if not, you need to remedy
same.
That.
Same. I need to check my list and see if it's not already on there.
Oh, man, Gank, I can tell you, if you don't have this game, this is like a must-own game. And also worth mentioning, I didn't even say it, the humor's on point, too. Like, all the things you can buy and equip your characters with have, like, funny little, like, tidbits, descriptions on them, and they're all great.
I love good flavor text.
Yes.
This game has fantastic flavor text. You will love it.
Awesome.
You should check out Levelhead or Crashlands from Butterscotch Shenanigans. They have really good flavor text in their games.
That's a great name for your company.
It is. You should listen to the last episode where George was on doing a review for Levelhead. And he did the Butterscotch Shenanigans theme song, nice. Barbershop theme quartet song style.
Butterscotch Shenanigans.
Good. Listen to the show. You'll know what's going on. But we do have more show to go. Tim's going to be coming on to chat, so I will let all of y'all get going, and I will proceed on to the show with him. Does anyone have any final words before we move on?
Bye, Dungeon of the Endless.
There you go.
Bye.
All right. And finally tonight, we are bringing in our good friend, Tim Ekibis. Tim, how are you doing?
I'm doing well.
How's things?
Doing okay. You know, hanging in there. Should not have my hand in front of my mouth when I'm trying to speak. But yeah, you know, doing pretty well. Lots of reviewing going on between things for this evening and next week.
Yeah, you're a busy guy.
I'm a busy boy, yeah. Like, the conversation went from, like, last week from, like, oh, do you want to do this while you're doing that? To, like, I don't think this other game is coming in. To, oh, this game just showed up 5 minutes later.
Yeah, the timing on that was pretty comical.
Yes, it was quite comical indeed.
But, hey, it's getting you to play some good games, huh?
It's getting me to play some games.
We'll find out if they're good or not.
Yeah, if they're good or not. I've yet to play one of them, but that's because I had so much other stuff going on. But
yeah.
Why it's and next
one,
week,
one of those that you didn't play we're talking about right now.
Yeah. One of them I got to, but we'll figure this out. Whatever, I watched a trailer. Fuck it.
We actually had that happen once on the show where someone was going to review a game, but their graphics card was incompatible with the game.
Oh, dear.
So they reviewed the trailer and gameplay footage of the game.
Oh, God.
Hey, we were upfront about everything, so.
Had to do what we had to do, I guess.
We had to talk about the game on the show, and that's how we handled it.
Yeah.
We do crazy things. So should we dive into your two games?
Let's dive in.
All right, you got two of them to talk about. The first one is called Hunt Down, developed by Easy Trigger, published by Coffee Stain Publishing, released May 12th on Xbox One, Switch, PS4, and Epic Games Store for $19.99. In the mayhem-filled streets of the future where criminal gangs rule and cops fear to tread, only the bounty hunters can free the city from the corrupt fist of felony, lay waste to the criminal underworld, and make a killing in this hard-boiled action comedy arcade shooter. Tim, tell us about Hunt Down.
Action comedy. I mean, I guess, there's funny stuff in here. I wouldn't bill it as an action comedy. Like, an action game first that happens to be funny. Happens to have some good writing. some good stuff in it. Yeah, Hunt Down. Woo! Yeah, this is a side-scrolling shooting game. Kind of a cyber. It's we are in the dystopian future now. But yeah, this has like kind of a cyberpunky futuristic apocalypse sort of vibe to it. Yeah, where you are a bounty hunter or one of three bounty hunters that you can play as. And you are tasked by some shadowy organization to go and there's story. There's story and quality writing in this game. You don't really need it, but it's there. it does add some good flavor to things. Just you'll get these briefings. Kind of the game is broken down into like four different sectors of the city, and your client will give you like a rundown on, or your boss or whatever will give you like a rundown on the area before you go in. So it's just like a nice little bit of extra stuff. And then, yeah, you got to go in there and take out these gang bosses in each area. So the game, it's a 2D side scroller. You pick one of three characters. You have a woman whose name I forgot. You have a guy named John Sawyer. And you have an android named Mo Man, which is a great name. And sometimes the enemies will react. They'll be like, oh, shit, it's Mo Man. just a good name. I like playing as him. I mostly played as John Sawyer. Mo Man has the fun of having a gun that fires exactly as many times as you hit the shoot button, which is always a mechanic that I appreciate. Reminds me of Metal Slug. But Mr. Sawyer has a metal lower jaw, and also he has just like a magnum that just does slow firing, but does good damage, and that eventually just seemed to suit my needs the best. Each character has a different throwable sub-weapon as well, so there is a difference between the three of them. They're not just like, you know, just pick one and they're all the same. You will play differently. Oh, and the girl has like a submachine gun sort of deal, so it shoots out burst fires. So you get dropped into these levels, and well, actually, you drive into these levels in your sweet future car, I should say. Sometimes running people over as you as you drive in. So as you scroll the levels, it's not really. It's a good mix of like sometimes you can get a little more runny and gunny. And sometimes you have to slow things down a little bit and use cover. So there will be maybe some boxes or barrels that you can duck behind really quick, though none of them are indestructible. You can't just like turtle forever. There will also be like doorways or like garages or just like means where you can kind of duck into the background by pressing up to get out of the way as well. So sometimes you will have these shootouts where it's like you're ducking out of the way, then leaning out and firing off a couple shots, then going back into cover before you can, you know, trying to shoot a guy down before you can run forward. But it's not a thing where it's just like cover, stop, shoot, and then go. It's like, no, you cover, you take a few shots, and then you take out the one guy that was in the way, and then you keep moving. Got to keep moving forward, because then someone's going to run up in your ass. Like, if you're hiding in one of those doorways or whatever, like if somebody just runs up on you, they can still melee you. And give you the hurt. You also have melee attacks yourself. If you're close up to somebody, you will give them the kick. Just kind of knock them away, which can be used to kick people off of cliffs, which is good. You will pick up... Your character starts off with a throwable, but there will be other throwables. You can pick up like grenades and Molotovs, and there's like remote mines, stuff like that. There are other weapons you can pick up all over a level that have limited ammunition. So this is where you start picking up like your shotguns and your Uzis and your automatic weapons and your machine guns and chain guns and rocket launchers. And all of those have a limited amount of ammunition. And you can only carry one at a time. You can switch from that back to your standard issue gun, which does have infinite ammo. Just if like you don't want to waste rockets on just a guy, you can switch back and just use that. But the game gives you like there is no shortage of guns dropped throughout a level. There enemies will drop guns. There will be guns hidden off to the side. There will be guns just lying out in the open for you to pick up. Somebody just left a gun there for you. Whatever, there it is. with some levels, definitely, like, if you kind of poke at the edges or you jump up, like, this slightly out-of-the-way platform, you might find some extra cool guns. There's also 3 stashes hidden in each level, which is just, like, a bonus kind of score thing when you're evaluating at the end of the level. If it tallies up whether you found all the stashes, how many guys you killed, and how many times you died. The way the game does checkpoints is you hit a checkpoint and it calls in like a little mobile surgical unit. And I don't mean one from like a hospital. It seems like a guy who's definitely like running his own practice on the side. so that like when you die, he just like kicks your ass. You know, you are assumably fixed back up and then kicked out of the back of his van again at no cost or anything. You just die. But it's another fun little thing that just adds personality to the game. It's not just like, oh, here's a checkpoint, and then you just go back to it. It's like, no, you die. Your body gets stitched back together by this shady doctor and then thrown back out into the world. And that's it. Yeah, each level, you know, punctuates itself with a boss fight against a particular bounty, and they're all like, each stage is themed kind of like, the first one is kind of like your generic futuristic like punk dudes, but then the second one is like all hockey themed guys, and then you're fighting bikers, and then it's like, I don't know, ninja samurai gangsters is sort of the last one. So it like, yeah, each character, each like boss is falls under that theme, but has his own distinct personality and distinct boss fight. They're all really different from one another, so they're all the game is a lot of fun, like, just top to bottom, like, the way everything is designed and works together is just a lot of fun to play through. I think the difficulty is really well balanced. It's not a game where you come out of the gate and it's like immediately trying to kick your ass. I personally, as someone who is a psychopath about difficult games, didn't feel like it got really hard until like the last set of levels, and then I was like, okay, you guys are dicks here. There was like not that I didn't die at all, but like that was the first time I was like, okay, this is like, I really got to drill down and like learn this pattern here, or like think about this encounter. But up to that point, like I feel like it ramped up pretty well. Yeah, the game, yeah, it's just like, it's just really solid and really well made overall. Just like the graphics look really good and are really detailed. Like it is not, you know, the levels are not repetitive. They do not feel repetitive anyway. They feel very distinct from one another. Lots of unique encounters. They do a good job of, like, every kind of zone, like as I said, they each have their own theme, but even within that, like, the enemies are very different from one another. It's not just like, oh, well, here's the guy who, you know, uses this, here's the melee guy who runs at you, he's just skinned a little bit differently. Here's the guy with the heavy rocket launcher, and he's just skinned a little bit differently. Like, the enemies all in each area are all very different from, like, the ones in previous areas. Like in the hockey area, the melee guy, he skates at you. Of course he does. and so he's like, a lot of guys skate at you in that one. So he's a lot faster. In the biker area, there's a lot more. Well, there are dudes on bikes and cars, that you have to look out for trying to run you over. So yeah, the game is just like a lot of fun. Like, the guns feel good, the game looks good, it sounds good. Like all the voiceover, like they filtered all the little voice lines just to make it sounded to me like it was coming out of like an arcade cabinet in the 80s. Like, where it's like, yeah, I can understand the words, but they're just like muffled like a little bit. At least like that, and just like the sheer amount of voice lines and shit talk coming out of like bosses and enemies and your character. yeah, it's something. I believe Mr. Sawyer told a boss that he was going to make them wish that their father had pulled out earlier.
Jesus,
that one was pretty, pretty in there, but, or out there.
Wow. But,
that's kind of level of grunginess going on in the writing of this game. But I think it all works really well, and it's a lot of fun to play.
Well, then at $20, what is your verdict?
Yeah, buy it. Yeah, absolutely. As you know, beyond just playing the game, of course, it has extra difficulty levels to make your life more miserable and give you more replay value. Or if you just want to play through as different bounty hunters, though, you can change your bounty hunter at any time. It just takes you back to the beginning of a level if you decide to do it in the middle of a level.
But
yeah, you're not like locked into your Mo Man playthrough. You can always switch.
Sounds good.
Yeah. All right.
One final game to talk about tonight is called Star Horizon, developed by Orbital Knight and No Gravity Development, published by No Gravity Games. Released May 14th on the Switch for $9.99. Experience fast action, thrilling levels, spectacular explosions, and lots of pew pew pew. Star Horizon is a reboot for the on-rail space shooter genre. Oh. Tim, tell us about Star Horizon.
Man, I wish I liked this game more.
Oh no.
I don't hate this game. I just wish I liked it, I guess. Like, I wish, I don't know. Anyway, well, I do know, and I'm about to tell you about it, I should say. So the game, yeah, it caught my eye when I was looking at it on the eShop. Like, oh, for that exact reason. Like, I want more on-rails 3D shooters like Star Fox. There just isn't enough of those in the world. I feel like it's a pretty forgotten genre. So that's why I wanted to check it out here. So the game has got... it looks good. It looked good enough, like really solid polygonal graphics. Like everything looks nice and sharp. And you go into these levels and your ship has, you got your rootin' tootin' shootin' laser, your base laser. You can do barrel rolls. You can do barrel rolls, do a barrel roll, do multiple barrel rolls. It's up to you. You do it all with one button, which is weird. Whether you're going left or right, you just kind of tap it and then you roll. You also have you have swarm missiles, which will shoot out like a cluster of three or more eventually, missiles, which will seek out enemies, or just like one, like heavier torpedo doodad. And both of those are on a cooldown, so you can use them with pretty solid regularity, which is good. The shooting, you have like a pretty big reticle. And it's much bigger than the lasers that you're shooting out, which are very, very slim, very, very fit, shooting out there. And basically, like any enemy, you want to get this sizable reticle over top of the enemy, and then you will auto aim onto the enemy to shoot them down or shoot at them or, you know, whatever. Like the lasers will just hone in like on an enemy that's in there. And it's just not something that felt great to me. And also you use that for like locking on your missiles, though that's like a little bit different, especially like the swarm missiles. Like obviously, like, yeah, you'd want to get a few targets in there and then you just smack the button and they go out. But just kind of like just the base, like aiming a laser to shoot and hit something didn't really feel good, because you're not really and it's a disconnect for me, because I'm trying to aim for a lot of the game is I'm like looking at the laser and trying to guide that towards you know, my targets, but I really just needed to get them into this big square on the screen, and then the laser would do it itself. And it creates this weird situation where I think about how like I would play these games and you know, you have to keep moving and dodging shots, where it's like I want to sweep my laser blasts over top of an enemy and hopefully get a couple shots in, and then, you know, it's going to move past them because I'm still getting shot at, so I'm trying to keep my ship moving. But as it is, you kind of need to like let that reticule rest so you can lock on for a second and then shoot the enemy. And I found that ends up with you getting shot a lot. At least that's how it felt like it was happening for me. Your ship does have shields that regenerate and hull damage, which does not. So you definitely have like a little bit of leeway, but it just didn't feel great overall. As you go in the levels, like they try to do this thing, and it's on some levels more than others, where you're kind of like the third or fourth level, actually the third and fourth level, in different capacities. Like you are flying around you're flying around like this large freighter, and the other you're flying around the outside of this space station. And like on the one, you're like fighting this freighter because the dude just doesn't like you and just starts fucking shooting at your ass. And so you have to like shoot, you're swinging around to shoot the different gun emplacements on the freighter in order to just like disable it so it'll stop shooting at you, basically. But you like, you're not deciding when your ship is flipping from one side of the ship to another. So like, you'll be confronted with like, oh, there's like five lasers here and one big one in the background, and I'm like trying to dodge and shoot. But then it's like all of a sudden the game's like, ho ho, now we flip over to the other side. And it's just like, oh wait, what? Okay, now we're going over here. And then you flip over to the top and it's like, okay, well, there's some lasers over here, so I'm going to fight them. But then it's like, okay, now we're going to flip back to the previous side again. And it doesn't like warn you. It's not something that you tell it to do. I mean, that's kind of a unique situation because you're bouncing back and forth shooting lasers on two particular sides. But yeah, also when I, you know, you're going around clearing around these mines around a space station, and it's like, I think they're trying to give you, you know, the sensation of like your ship is flying around and trying to give you these big swooping movements as you're flying through space, but just ended up kind of being like, okay, well now suddenly I'm turning this way, and it would play the trick of like, oh, and now there's something like right in your face that you have to shoot, or you're just getting hit by a mine. It's like, oh, I can see it hanging right off the edge there, and I bet the, you know, I'm going to swing that way in a second, and lo, I did. But again, it just doesn't feel good. Like, when I think of these games, I feel like more like I am going down a corridor. Like, even when I'm in, like, a space battle, I am mostly, like, flying in a straight line, like, down, like, a pipe, basically. So it's not swooping all over the place. And I get the idea of trying to evoke this sensation of like flying around in space and trying to make it feel, you know, cool and dynamic. But I think it's trouble when you're being shot at the same time and you don't know you're going to move. And then like my ship is being pulled into shots or out of position or like, you know, losing the thing that I was aiming at, just didn't feel good. And then the next mission too, I forgot, like, yeah, you're like trying to defend these transports, which is always a top tier, mission in any game. And you're like swooping around and through these transports and trying to shoot these enemy ships. And then you have these situations where it's like, I found a lot of the times where enemy shots were just kind of came really fast and were hard to see. A lot of times they would take the form of just like thin green lasers as opposed to your thin red lasers. So it was hard to see that like, oh, they're shooting, but then it's also like, oh, they're shooting, but then also it's coming at me very fast. So it's tougher to get out of the way. So rather than like skillful dodging, I was just like spam rolling around trying to get out of the way of it. And again, it just doesn't feel good. And then you have other levels where you'll have ships that are coming up from behind you, and you know they're coming up from behind you because they start shooting you like and hitting you when they're off screen. And that's frustrating. It sucks. And it just ended up being like a real bummer overall because the game like looks good. The voice acting and the writing isn't great, but like almost it's not quite funny enough, like not quite in like a Symphony of the Night sort of way. But it's just like, man, you just got people to read these lines, didn't you? And I thought it was going to be funny really early on because like the dude, I think your dude is like was like in stasis or whatever, and he identifies himself and he identifies himself as John, and then like his last name is bleeped out. So I just assumed his last name was like Motherfucker, Dick Basket or something like that. And they just bleeped it out for fun. I don't know. But he's a real tool.
John Dick Basket.
Dick Basket. There are branching paths within the levels sometimes, which can have consequences down the line in the story. And so, again, that's cool. That is a cool thing. But just the... And the other cool thing is the upgrade system for your ship. You do accrue points as you shoot things down. You get a bonus at the end of the first time you clear each level, which gives you currency to spend on upgrades for your lasers, for your missiles, for your other missiles, and for your ship. And those are, you know, significant upgrades, and that's good. That's cool. But actually playing and flying around ends up not being a ton of fun. And I kind of hit a wall, like, for a while on that third stage, the aforementioned freighter, where I was just getting fucking smoked by, you know, lasers shooting at me and the camera flipping around. I'm just like, man, I am straight up not having a good time. So I was like, okay, well, I'm going to go back and replay a couple levels just to get some more currency. I mean, there was only two levels to replay at that point. I'm going to get some more currency so I can just, like, grab another upgrade on my ship, and hopefully that'll help. But that's when I realized, like, oh, you only get that first time clear bonus the first time you clear it. So I wasn't getting that much currency. So like grinding through the old levels just to upgrade my ship to make my life a little bit easier didn't seem worth it either. So it's just, it's a bummer because it seems like there's a lot of solid stuff going on, like good ideas. It's just like the actual act of flying around and aiming and shooting down ships ends up being more, not as fun as I wish it was.
Yeah.
Which is a bummer because like if you already own one of their games, this game's only $5 like until like the beginning of June. But
I love when companies do that on the Switch, when you own one of their games, some of their other stuff's discounted.
Yeah. It's a cool little system. Sometimes it's a bit of like racing to the bottom, but at least when you have that, like, oh, if you already own one of our games, then you can buy this one at a discount right off the gate. Like that's a cool thing. I like that. But maybe you shouldn't buy this one because it's not a lot of fun.
Unfortunately. Well, it being $10, what is your official verdict?
Oh, you shouldn't buy it. I'm sorry. I wish it was great. I wish I had more fun with it. But it just doesn't handle well enough as a shooter for me to slap the old recommendo on it.
Ah, well.
Yep.
Oh, well, that is it for this episode. Tim, thanks for being here. Always good having you on chatting.
Yeah. I'll be back next week.
Indeed. Thanks to everyone else who was here who did their thing as well. Music, I think I'm going to play some more stuff from the 1UPs off of their B-Sides album. What do you think of that?
Yeah, that sounds good. It was funny listening to the album because I've heard all of those songs before because I had like every disparate place that they had released those songs, but it's still nice to have them all in one place.
And of better quality than like 96K bit MP3.
Yeah, that was nice. So yeah, that was a nice little surprise, and they released it on that day when Bandcamp was giving all the proceeds straight to the artist. So that was extra good.
Indeed. So more 1UPs, good stuff there. Tim, do you have any final words to end the show?
You excited for Double or Nothing?
I am. Are you going to be watching that?
I'll be there. I put in money for it. I better be watching it. I didn't do it just to be nice. Yeah, I'm really excited. It's been a lot of fun watching AEW with a virtual internet crew, but the show has been great lately. I'm excited to see Double or Nothing. Some great matches. It's a great card, top to bottom. With a surprise. I don't know if you've been paying attention to all the announcements for the Casino ladder match, but they got Darby, Colt Cabana, Orange Cassidy, Rey Fénix, Scorpio Sky, Kip Sabian, Frank Azarian, Luchasaurus versus To Be Determined.
Oh,
be a surprise, which immediately people were like, oh, the people that WWE released their no competes aren't up yet, except for one man.
Who?
Well, that would be Drew Gulak.
Oh, because yeah.
His contract just ended. Yeah, he wasn't released. He would be free to show up, but I don't know.
That would be trippy to see him show up and just be right in the mix of AEW.
Yeah, I don't know. He seems like, I don't know if I see him going there. But I don't know. We'll see. I like surprises. Yep, we'll find out Saturday night.
Live. Be live there.
On pay-per-view.